Okay, good morning, everyone.
And good morning.
As always, welcome to the Sunday morning shiur. Today's shiur is going to be a little bit more on the theoretical side, although it has obviously great, great relevance practically. But I would like to discuss in very, very brief form the concept of bittul in the Torah. One of the basic issues of kashrus that comes up, we know that it's almost inevitable that in preparing food and preparing kosher food, there could be a question that things get mixed together inadvertently, and the non-kosher ingredient may have gotten mixed in somehow, some way, often with the best of intentions. It just happens. You could have it with a bus of a cholov type of situation where milk and meat together get mixed inadvertently, or a person didn't realize that they purchased in the store an ingredient that wasn't kosher or whatever it may be. So we know that basically this gets into the area of bittul, that all hope is not lost when such a thing takes place. If a person becomes aware of such a mixture that took place, such a taruvos, that took place, so then the first avenue where a person looks is to see if there was a bittul. Potentially, was there enough of the kosher item to nullify the non-kosher item? Okay, that's what's called bittul. Bittul means nullification. We'll soon see exactly how bittul takes place, but the basic idea, the general idea, is that the kosher food potentially could outnumber and thus nullify the non-kosher, and thus the food would still be edible. Now, what does this have to do with this week's parasha? So it happens to be that one of the basic halachas of kashrus is learned out from the laws of the nazir. And if you look in the sheet here, the pasuk tells us at the very beginning of the discussion of Nazir, which we had in yesterday's parasha, the Torah says, "Miyayin v'sheichar yazir," that a Nazir has to separate himself from yayin, from wine, and sheichar, which is translated to mean old wine. Today, sheichar is the word that's used for beer, but it doesn't seem that that's what the Torah was referring to. So sheichar means old wine. Yazir, a person should separate himself. Not only that, the Nazir, that is, should separate himself. Not only that, v'chometz yayin, v'chometz sheichar lo yishta. He also should separate himself from the vinegar that comes from wine, or the vinegar that comes from old wine. And then the Torah says, v'chol mishras anovim lo yishta, that he should not drink mishras anovim. Mishras anovim seems to mean the liquid in which grapes were soaked, which we will soon see what that's a reference to. And then the pasuk concludes by saying, "Vanovim lachem viveishim lo yochel," and he also cannot eat grapes, be they fresh or dried grapes or raisins or whatever. A nazir cannot eat any of these things. That's what the Torah tells us. So the Torah basically lists off wine, different types of wine, the vinegar that comes from wine, grapes, and in the middle of the pasuk, the Torah says, "Lo chol mishras anovim lo yishte," anything in which grapes were soaked. So what is this referring to? So if you turn over the page here, we have the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim on Daf Mem Dalet. Okay, the Gemara actually begins on Mem Dalet and Al, but it was the person who prepared the sheet was able to blend it together. So we'll pick up the Gemara here from the top line. At the end of the top line of the Gemara says, "V'hai mishras lahachihu da'asa." Asks the Gemara. The Gemara is discussing previously. The Gemara was discussing what this word, what this phrase, Mishras Anovim, is referring to. So the Gemara asks, The Gemara says that the pasuk Mishras Anovim is needed to teach us the following. Mishras, says the Gemara, what does it mean? The liquid in which the grapes were soaked, says the Gemara. Litain tam ki'ikar. That this teaches us that the taste of a food is considered as if it is the food itself. Tam ki'ikar. This is a basic halachic concept in the laws of kashrus. Tam means taste. Ikar means the food itself. So when we say tam ki'ikr, that means that the taste of a food is considered the food itself. What does that mean? So the Gemara explains, she'im shara anovim b'mayim, that if a person had soaked, let's say the Nazir had soaked grapes in water, and then he had removed the grapes, but v'yesh b'hem tam yayin, but the water itself still has the taste of the grapes, so then chayiv, he is chayiv. In other words, we're not talking about wine. We're talking about that the person took grapes, soaked the grapes in water, removed the grapes, but the taste of the grapes got into the water. So you'll say, well, why can't a Nazir eat that? Why can't a Nazir drink that? That's not wine, and it's not grapes. Where there are no grapes, there were once grapes, but their grapes have been removed. Says the Gemara, from this is what the Pasuk is teaching us, that if the taste of the grape has been imparted in any way into the water, so then he can't drink it either. Why? Because tam ki'ikr, because that water is considered like grapes itself. The water is considered like grapes. Says the Gemara, mikana todan l'chol atarakula. The Gemara says, on this basis, we can extend this to the entire Torah, not just to the laws of Nazir. You'll say, perhaps it only applies to the Nazir. What does it have to do with us? Says the Gemara, well, uman Nazir she'eni suris or olam, just like a Nazir, where the prohibition of a Nazir, relatively speaking, is a lighter prohibition that vis-a-vis other isurim in the Torah because of the fact that it's only temporary. The prohibition of a Nazir, generally speaking, is only a Nazir for a prescribed period of time. Right? In other words, stam nazirus shloshim yom, the Gemara says that typically it would be 30 days. A person could make himself a nazir for even a longer period of time if he wants to. Theoretically, a person could be a nazir for his entire life, like we find certain people were in Tanakh. But whatever the case may be, generally speaking, that's the exception rather than the rule. Generally speaking, Nazir is not an Isser Olam. This is not a type of Isser that goes for a long period of time, doesn't go forever. And not only that, Ve'eni Suro Isser Hanoa, and the prohibition of the Nazir, the prohibition, by the way, the Nazir, I assume we all know, is the person who takes upon himself a vow to abstain from certain pleasures of the world, right? So the Nazir is prohibited to drink wine. The Nazir has to let his hair grow. So all of these prohibitions are not forever. They are not asur b'hano. A Nazir is allowed to get benefit from wine. V'yesh heter li'isuro. And also, there could possibly even be a heter for the Isser of Nazir. Rashi explains that means that a person who accepted himself upon himself to become a Nazir, so it's like any other vow, that if theoretically circumstances arise, a person could nullify the vow. He could do Ataras Nedarim. So therefore, the prohibition of the Nazir has all these potential leniencies. And yet, also bo tam ki'ikr, and yet, when it comes to this, the Torah said that tam is ki'ikr. In other words, this, so to speak, lighter prohibition, the Torah was strict and said that taste is considered like the food itself. So says the Gemara, well then, kalayim she'isuris or olam, if you have prohibited blended food items together, which are prohibited forever, v'isuris or hanov, ain't hat l'isuro, ain't odin she'asatam ki'ikr. So then certainly it should apply to other prohibitions in the Torah pertaining to eating. And thus we have the basic principle, tam ki'ikr, that a taste of an item, the taste of a non-kosher item, is considered as if the item was there itself, even if the item has been removed. Now, how does this apply to us? So, the simple cases where it would apply would mean that if a person, let's say, cooked kosher and non-kosher food together, and then after a brief moment or whatever, the cook realized, oh my gosh, I put in meat which wasn't kosher, so let me take it out. So the cook quickly takes out the non-kosher meat, and the only thing left in the pot is the kosher meat. So by the time the cooking process finishes, the only thing that's going to be in that pot that was cooked is the kosher meat. Nevertheless, we all know that in that situation you have a problem. Why is there a problem? Because since non-kosher meat was in there at the outset, So the cooking process, the boiling water, let's say it was cooked in water, the boiling process extracted the taste from the non-kosher meat, and that non-kosher taste was then put into the kosher meat. So even though you'll say, but there's no kosher meat here anymore, there's no non-kosher meat here, I took it out, where's the problem? The answer is, this is the principle of tam ki ikar. This is what the Torah is telling us, that taste is just as bad as if you had non-kosher meat there itself. And this presents, obviously, the one of the great issues in cooking in a kitchen. This is where shilas that come up, in other words, the classical situation that a woman is preparing the chont for Shabbos, okay, and a child walks by holding a cup of milk, and some of the milk splashes into the chont. Okay? So where's the problem? The milk dissolves immediately. You don't see it anymore. It's gone. Right? But so you'll say, I don't see a problem. It's blended. It's gone. Why should there be any shaila? The answer is this reason. Because of tam ki ikar. Because taste is considered like the food itself. So therefore, it's not just the non-kosher item that presents a problem, but it's the taste of the non-kosher item that presents a problem. Okay? And the same issue comes about, obviously, we know, in a situation where a person cooks in a non-kosher utensil. So again, you'll say, what should be the problem? If I would take from my next, I need a pot, a woman is preparing for Shabbos, and she doesn't have enough pots, she's having a lot of company. So he said, I'll go to the next door neighbor who happens to be a guy, and I'll borrow a clean pot from them. There's nothing in there. It's all been cleaned out, thoroughly, thoroughly cleaned. What's the problem? So, as we know, the problem is because taste has been absorbed into the vessel. Right? In other words, the guy, the non-Jew, has previously used it, assuming they've used it right? It's not new. They used it previously. And then they went ahead, they cooked non-kosher food into the pot. And we say, halakhically speaking, the tradition is that the taste of the food goes into the pot and into the walls of the pot and then comes out into the next food that's being cooked. So again, if you didn't have this pasuk of Mishras Anovim, if we did not have this pasuk of the Nazir, that wouldn't be a problem. Because you say, so what? So show me where. Why? Because they cooked ham, they cooked pork in it last week, so what? What is it? Well, yesterday, let's say, they cooked some non-kosher item in this pot. What's the difference? It's not here now, it's all gone, it's thoroughly cleaned. You could check it, you'll see for yourself, it's totally clean. So this is the chiddush of the pasuk of Nazir. The pasuk called Mishras Anovim Lo Yochal teaches us the din of Tam Ki Iker. Yes, I'm sorry, I had a question. Yeah.
So originally in the example that you gave of Tam Ki Iker, you said it was both the same meat and meat, by example.
Okay,
so
I get
that. Yeah. So are you mocking? Because you can't tell the difference in taste.
No, so I get that right now. So okay. I get that right now. So okay, so the meat and meat example raises the point that the different categorization of foods in halacha, which we will get to right now. So, but just to briefly understand this point, this is the din of tam ki ikar, the chiddush of the Torah, the new law that emerges from the parsha of Nazir is that taste presents a problem just as much as food itself. Okay, so now when does this apply? So the question is being asked, so you'll say, but that should only be in a situation where the taste is noticeable. But let's say the taste is not noticeable, right? In other words, let's say the if you have two similar items, so the example that I gave, which is meat and meat, which could, depending on the situation, could be referred to in halacha as min b'mino, that you're dealing with two similar items. If you're dealing with two similar items, so you can make the argument that what do you mean the taste went into the food? But you don't, it all tastes the same. So where is the non-kosher taste? So it happens to be that we'll get to that in 1 minute. To fully understand the effects of this halacha, we have to take a step back. We have to take a step back and just understand the different forms of mixtures that exist in halacha that potentially could exist and the different forms of bittul. So we have to understand that I think everyone is familiar with to some degree the concept of bittul b'shishim, that sometimes you need 60 times in order to nullify something. You need 60 times the amount. If you have 60 times the kosher amount versus the non-kosher amount, is a bittul. But not all items need such a bittul. Not everything needs such a bittul. For example, if you have a situation of two food items that were not really blended together, if you have a situation of two dry, uncooked items that got mixed together, okay, you have two pieces of meat, okay, so the example I used before, if you have several pieces of meat, okay, and included in the several pieces of meat is a piece of non-kosher meat, but somehow it got put onto your table, someone put down a piece of non-kosher meat, let's say a non-Jew came into the house, put down a piece of non-kosher meat, and you had kosher meat together with it, and it got mixed up, but you haven't cooked it. It's just mixed, they're just sitting there, all the pieces are sitting there, and they are, let's say it's already edible, it was already cooked, let's take a simple case, okay, it got mixed together, you lost track of which is which. So the halacha in such a case is that really all you need is a bittul berov. In a situation where you have solid, well, it doesn't have to be solid, but where you have uncooked food where you have similar types of food that have not been cooked together and they're just standing there by themselves, so then the halacha is that they are bittul berov. Okay, this is learned out from a pasuk, which we have if you turn on the back to the first side of the sheet. Okay, so we have, there's a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. There's a question, really, that not everyone agrees you learned it from this pasuk, but this seems to be the easiest pasuk to use. The pasuk tells us at the end of the, here in Shmos, Perek Chaf Gimel, pasuk days, so the last three words in the pasuk, Achare Rabim Lahatos tells us that you are allowed to follow the majority opinion. You're allowed to follow the majority opinion to determine a case. Directly, what this pasuk is referring to is a beis din where you have several judges. You have, let's say, three judges on a beis din. So they're not all in agreement. So the halacha is that you go by the majority opinion, right? You go by the majority opinion. This pasuk was interpreted by the Chazal to teach us many other situations where we go by the majority. It's not just in litigation that we go by the majority opinion of judges, but rather it is extended to other situations that when there is a suffix in halacha, when there is a doubt in halacha in different situations, where we don't know, very often happens, unclear as to what may have happened. Let's say a person finds a piece of meat, let's say in the street, the classical case in the Gemara, that if a person finds a piece of meat in the street, so min ha-Torah, you don't know, it's not marked, is it kosher, is it non-kosher, so by the law of the Torah, if the majority of meat in that town that's sold is kosher, you'd be allowed to pick it up and eat it. Even though you say, well, I don't know, you don't know for sure. Even if it was 51 to 49, 51% kosher, 49% non-kosher, nobody would ever take such a chance if there was a health issue involved, right? Like the old example, if there was a 1% chance that the cup of water you were drinking was poison, nobody would drink it. Yet the Torah says that if there's a 49% chance that the food, that this is not kosher, but there's a 51% chance that it is, so min ha-Torah, you're allowed to go by the rov. It happens to be, you can't get too excited about this halacha because of the fact that the Rabbanan prohibited for a different reason, because basar shana salmon ayin, but the fact of the matter is that would be the law of the Torah. The law of the Torah would be that in such a situation, you go by the majority. In situations of suffolk, you're allowed to go by the majority. So with that in mind, the Shulchan Aruch tells us, and we have it here on the sheet on page 3, Shulchan Aruch tells us that chaticha she'ena ruya l'schabed, that if you have a small piece of meat, we'll deal with that perhaps later, what exactly those words mean, shenesarva b'acheros, where the meat got mixed together with other pieces of meat, And it's min b'mina, it is the same type of meat. Yavesh b'yavesh, and it is dry, meaning it has not been mixed together, it has not been cooked together, it has not blended together with the other meats. So the, you'll skip here the parentheses, and the Shulchan Aruch says, chad b'tray batel. The halacha is that it is batel barov, that it is nullified 1-2. Chad b'tray means by a 2-1, vote, so to speak, by 2-1 majority, since if you, assuming you have more kosher meat than non-kosher meat, so if there is a majority of kosher meat, it doesn't really have to be double the amount. The expression chad betray just means that if you have more, in other words, in a the simplest case would be you have 3 pieces and 2-1, but you don't need a 2-1 ratio. Even if it's a 51-49 ratio, the halacha would be that you're allowed to eat it. This is called bittel barov. This is called bittel barov. And that is the halacha. That is the halacha. That, again, we're not talking where you cooked it. It was cooked already. It was cooked already. And you have, or whatever, it's edible the way it is. Okay, and, but it just got mixed together, the kosher and the non-kosher, and it's dry. And it has not been blended. The meat doesn't blend. It's just pieces. There are this piece, this piece, this piece, this piece. The halacha is if the majority are kosher, chad betray batel. Yeah, go ahead.
People don't eat from that piece of meat.
Oh, we'll soon see. How does this work? We'll discuss that right now. How does that play out? So that means, let's just say, for example, if you had 3 pieces of meat, 2 were kosher, not, one was not kosher, and you forgot which was which, so the halacha is it is nullified. Now, what does it mean it's nullified? So what is that, how does that play out practically? So there are 4 opinions in the Rishonim. There are 4 opinions what that means. Okay, the main opinion, which is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, is the opinion of the Rashba, who says the following. The Rashba says that in such a case, you have the right to assume every single piece of meat that you eat, you have the right to assume is from the majority. Meaning that when the Torah said, Acharei Rabim Lahatos, when the Torah said you follow the majority, so that's a logic. That means that it's like a probability. Each one is presumed to have been from the acceptable meat. So therefore, the Rashba says that each piece, as you pick it up, you have the right to say, this one's from the majority, so I can eat it. Then you take piece number 2. This one's from the majority, so I can eat it. Now you have piece number 3. So you say, well, 1 second, one of them isn't kosher, and I already ate 2 of them. But says the Rashba, so what? The logic is that you have the right to assume each one individually is from the majority. So therefore, you could take piece number 3 and eat it also. One person can eat all 3 pieces as long as, says the Rashba, he doesn't eat them together. If you eat them all at the same time, then you lost the logic. Because the logic is, it's a question of likelihood. In other words, what the Torah is saying is, it doesn't matter whether you hit the bad one or not. This is a principle. This is a rule in the Torah. This is the way that we handle a suffix. The way you handle a suffix is you go by the majority. So that means that each one is presumed to be, the likelihood is that this is the kosher one. So as long as you take each one at a time, on each one you could say, well, this is probably from the kosher meat, and this one is also probably from the kosher meat, and this one is also probably from the kosher meat. So one person can eat all 3, even though there is no question that he has eaten the non-kosher one. He has, in other words, an amazing, amazing halacha. He has eaten definitely, without any question, he has eaten the non-kosher meat. Nevertheless, the Rashi says, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because of the fact that the approach that a person takes here, the Torah gives us an approach. So in effect, if you follow the approach of the Torah, the non-kosher meat becomes permissible. In other words, it becomes permissible based on this principle. The principle is that I have the right to assume that this is kosher. So even though you ate all 3, it's fine. Yes.
I can see if the guy eats 2 out of
right.
3.
Right.
Or he eats 1 out of 3.
Right.
But if he's eating 3 out of the 3,
right.
There's 100% probability he's eating.
There's 100% probability, that's true. There's 100% probability that he ate the non-kosher one when you look at it from the sum total of them. But when the din of Acharei Rabim Lahatos, says the Rashba, the understanding of that din is that each one has its own judgment. What's the din with this one? What's the deal with this one? So you're right. You'll say, but isn't that crazy? Look what happened. The guy ate, this religious fellow, right, puts on tefillin every day, and he goes ahead, and he just ate non-kosher meat. That's what it, so the Rashba says that in this situation, the non-kosher meat becomes permissible. This is an oddity in halacha, that non-kosher meat can become acceptable to eat because of the fact that even though on the one hand, yes, it's true that there's a guarantee that you got the bad one, no question about it, but on the other hand, the approach that's taken to resolve the suffix is that each one has to be assessed. What can I assume this one is? What can I assume? You'll say, well, FDA 2, you'll say, well, even if I could assume this one is kosher, but there's no question if I eat this one, I will then have eaten all three. So the Rashba says, it doesn't matter. And believe it or not, this is the halacha that's paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, okay, that he says here in Simon Kuf Tesif, I have amazing din, he says, Umutal Akhlam Adam Echad Kol Achas Bifnei Atzma, a person can eat each one of them individually. Avolol yochal shloshtam yachad. However, you should not eat all, the one guy should not eat all three at the same time. That's the first opinion. Then he brings the second opinion, which is the opinion of the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, which says, the yesh misha oser la'ochlam adam echad afilu ze'achar ze'. Comes along the Smag, and the Smag says, yeah, it's true that it may be on the one hand, this logic makes sense, but on the other hand, there's 100% guarantee that you're gonna get the bad one. So therefore, the Smag says that one person can't eat all three of them. However, another Jew could eat the third one. Which is also strange, because you'll say, well, there's still a guarantee that somebody got the bad one, right? In other words, if you want to look at it from that perspective, this doesn't really help that much, because, okay, it removes the tremendously bizarre idea that one guy ate all three, but you have two Jews. So one guy ate, they all have to follow the laws of kashrus. So one ate two, the other one ate the third one, somebody got the bad one, but the answer is, doesn't matter, because in each one you have the right to say that this separated out from the majority. That is the second opinion. Comes along the Ramah, and the Ramah says, V'chein yesh linog l'chadchila. Says the Ramah that this is really what a person should do l'chadchila. L'chadchila, preferably, in other words, even though the first opinion that's presented is the Ikar Shita, the Rashba, but nevertheless, l'chadchila, if a person can help it, this is what you should do. And then he brings the opinion of Rashi, which is the third opinion, that Rashi says, V'yesh machmirin lahashlich echad olitin lavodas kochavim. The third opinion is that one of them has to go. One piece has to go. So the third piece of meat, whichever, you can take any one you want, one of them has to be either tossed or handed to a guy, but Jews cannot eat all three pieces of meat. That is the opinion of Rashi. See, he says the Ramah, V'eino elo chumra ba'alma. That this is a chumrah. It's a chumrah. That's not the halach. Okay, so there you have it. So those are three opinions, amazing, amazing din of Bittul Berov. And then there's the fourth opinion of the Rush, which in a certain sense makes it a little easier to understand, which is that the Rush says that the concept of Holchan Achar Arov, the idea of going by the majority, is not a logic. It's not logical, because if it was logical, then perhaps we have this room to say that it's not 100% logical from all sides. So the Rush says that when the Torah says, Acher Rab Mahatos, what the Torah is telling you is that in such a situation, the non-kosher meat is ne'pach leheter. The non-kosher meat becomes, in effect, converted. It underwent the conversion. That you had the meat sitting there. I just had Rus a few days ago, right? So here, yeah, not only can people convert, but non-kosher food can also convert. Okay, if you have a mixture of kosher and non-kosher meat together, and the majority is kosher meat, the non-kosher meat puts on a yarmulke. And the that's what the Torah is saying, that it's nepach lehet, you have the right to follow the majority, that it loses its status as non-kosher meat. And therefore, you could eat them all. One person can eat them all, even at the same time. Okay, that's not the halacha that's followed in the Shulchan Aruch. But there you have the four opinions. Now, having said that, all of this is before. That's only speaking when they're similar items which got mixed together and they were not cooked. So because they were not cooked together, there is no issue of tam ki ikar. In other words, the chiddush that we learned out from yesterday's parsha, from the pasuk of the nazir called mishras anovim lo yochel, that the nazir, that he can't even eat something, he cannot drink water that has the taste of grapes, so that wouldn't be relevant in this case because no taste has been transferred. However, once you cook it, if you take food, if you have kosher and non-kosher items, not in this case, but if you take kosher and non-kosher items and cook them together, so then even if you have a simple majority of kosher, the problem does not go away because the non-kosher imparts taste into the kosher. That's what the pasuk is teaching us, and therefore you have a problem. Now, for that, we require a bittul b'shishim. For that, we require a bittul. This is a well-known halacha to remove the issue of taste. That is where we have the concept that you need 60 times the amount. 60 times, in other words, you have to have 60 times the amount of kosher versus non-kosher, and then it's acceptable. Okay, so going back to the previously stated example, if you have the milk that splashes into the cholent, okay, so assuming it was just a small amount of milk and immediately dissolves, you don't see it. If you see it, you have to take it out. But anything, nothing can be bottled, nothing can be nullified if it's discernible. If you could see it, then you always have to remove it. But if it has become, you can't see it anymore. It dissolved, immediately dissolved into the cholent, but there's milk in there. So the halacha is, if you have 60 times the amount, you're allowed to eat it. Why 60 times the amount? So basically, this is a hashara, this is an estimate that the Chazal made, the Chachamim made an estimate. There is an indication from a pasuk also yesterday's parasha to this effect, but we'll just keep it simple and say that it's an estimate that when it comes to taste, if you have 60 times the amount, then no matter how sharp the taste was, it will be removed. Even if it was, let's say, the taste of onions, which is a sharp taste that doesn't just, disappear so easily. But if you had 60 times the amount, then it's considered good enough. Now, the truth be told that if not everything has a sharp taste, and therefore you'll say there could be some things that don't need 60 times the amount, which is in fact true. That theoretically, if it was a weaker taste, you wouldn't need shishim. However, the problem that comes up in the halacha is how are you going to determine that? Because since it's possible that the taste is noticeable, so you can't taste, a Jew can't taste it. You'll say, well, let me taste it and see. But if the taste is discernible, then you just violated a prohibition in the Torah. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. So you can't take that chance. To give it to a non-Jew to taste is also not such a simple thing because of the fact that a non-Jew is not, his report on this matter is not acceptable in halacha because of the fact that he may just be saying it to please you. He knows that's what you want to hear. He doesn't take the whole thing so seriously. So therefore he doesn't, it's not a big deal by him. It's not his halacha. It's a Jew's halacha. So it's like anything else, it doesn't apply to me. So why should I take it so seriously? So therefore the bottom line is that when it comes to these situations, we're machmer in everything. We're machmer in everything that it has to be 60 times. Okay, and thus we have the din of bittul b'shishim. Okay, now the concept of something being bittul b'shishim applies, as we said, because of the fact that the taste is still discernible. So you will say, well, that should only be true in a case where there are two different items, where the taste is discernible. For example, milk that fell into cholent, so the cholent doesn't have milk, the cholent has one taste, milk has another taste, so the taste is discernible. But what happens if you have two similar tasting things that fell in? Like, for example, you wanted to make some hot milk or whatever, and you had some from a non-kosher animal milk that fell in. So you'll say, well, let's assume for a moment that all of it tastes the same. It could be it doesn't, but let's just say that it all tastes the same. So you'll say, well, in that situation, you don't taste it anyway. What do you mean you have to nullify the taste? What taste? The taste is the kosher stuff is what you're tasting. Who says you're tasting the non-kosher? So the answer is that argument is valid min ha-Torah. However, because of the complexity of these halachas, the Rabbanan came along and the Rabbanan said that you can't do that either. Even if it's min bimino, the Rabbanan said that if in any way it is similar to the Torah's case of Tam Ki Iker, it is prohibited. So now, the Torah's case of Tam Ki Iker is where you have min b'she'eno mino, where you have two different types of items that were cooked together. The Rabbanan says you need to violate the Torah law, you need two things. You need, it has to be two different types of food, number one, and number two is that it has to be that it was cooked together, or blended together. The Rabbanan came along and said that even if you have one of these conditions, it would be prohibited. So therefore, midrabbanan, even if it was min bimino, even if it was two similar tasting foods, but they were cooked together, you still have a problem. Even though you'll say, what do you mean, but what taste? Well, where's the taste? I don't taste anything. The answer is, it doesn't matter. This is the din that the Rabbanan, because it's so close to the Torah law, so like you have in many rabbinic enactments with Asusi Yogo Torah, the Rabbanan created a getter, a fence around the law of the Torah, so therefore we have this stringency. Okay, if it's min bimino that were cooked, and also, the Rabbanan enacted that even if it was not cooked, but it was two dissimilar types of things, then you also need shishim. So how could you have such a thing? So for example, if you have pieces of meat that were, or pieces of anything, non-kosher and non-kosher, that were cut into such small pieces, that you can't determine anymore what's what. In other words, it was diced in such a manner that you can't tell what you're eating. You can't see the kosher from the non-kosher. So even though they haven't been cooked together, just simply mixed together, right, then you also need shishim. That would be a case, because that has one similarity to the Torah law. In other words, in order to be the Torah law, it has to be either, it has to be two conditions. Again, it has to be that the two dissimilar tastes, A, and B, they were cooked together. The Rabbanan said, even if you had one of those conditions, it would also be usur. So thus, it comes out that a whole idea that you could have a bittul berov, that you could have a nullification based on a simple majority, that would only take place when you had nothing in common with the Torah's case. For example, in a situation where you had two similar types of food, min bimino, two similar tasting foods, and they were not mixed together. They were not cooked together. They were not blended together. If you have both of those conditions, then it's batel berov. Then it will be nullified on the majority. Anything other than that, you would need 60 times. Yeah.
And when you say, Kalshkin, if the Torah is giving you the case of two different minim, so it would be pashit that obviously, then, you know, Kalchomer, if it was the same min, then even more so it should be Yasser. Okay. So here we're saying with the Rabbanon.
No, doesn't that contradict your previous question? In other words, weren't you saying before that if the taste, in other words, you can't taste it. The whole issue is Tam Ki Iker. What's the issue? Why do you need 60 times? You need 60 times because the taste is there. The taste is there. The food isn't there anymore. The taste is there. You say, but where's the taste? In other words, if I taste the non-kosher food, that's a problem. That's what the chiddush of the pasuk in the parasha of Nazir, that kol mishras anavim lo yishta, means that if you could taste the non-kosher item or the impermissible item, then you have a problem. But you say, I don't taste it. Why don't I taste it? Because it's the same taste as the majority of kosher items, of kosher food. So I'm not tasting it. What I'm tasting is permissible. So this is why it's not midaraisa, it's only midrabbana. Okay, now, the difference between whether a case, you'll say, so in the end of the day, what's the difference if it's asur min hatorah or asur midrabbana? It really doesn't matter because we go by the rabbanan, obviously, right? That we accept the mitzvahs to rabbanan also, not just the mitzvahs to araisa. So the answer to that would be, this is discussed in the Shulchan Aruch, in the case of a suffix. If you had a situation where, let's say, you had a pot of food that was cooking and some non-kosher food entered into it, and then before you were able to determine whether you had 60 times the amount, the pot got knocked over and some of it splashed out. Some of the contents of the pot, let's say you're cooking soup, okay, and someone knocked over the pot and now it was nishpach, it spilled out. So now you cannot, you lost your ability to tell whether you had 60 times the amount. In other words, you look and you say, well, right now there's not 60 times. I know how much milk fell into my chicken soup, or I know how much milk fell into my meat soup, let's say. I know how much fell in, but right now with what's left, I don't have 60 times, but it could be I did originally. It could be I did originally. In other words, the milk splashed in when the pot was whole. Now the pot got knocked over, some of it spilled out, but I may have had 60 initially. So in that situation, you have a suffix. So here, if it would be the type of thing that was prohibited by the Torah law, you would say suffix daraisa l'chumra. You would have to take the strict opinion. Whereas, if it was prohibited only by rabbinic law, so then you'd be able to say suffix darabanan l'kula. Then you'd be able to eat it. So this is a scenario where it comes up, but it's not the most common type of thing. Now, just to give you examples of how this plays out, of how this would play out, okay? So basically like this, if you would have, for example, it doesn't only have to be with food. Let's say you had plates, okay? And you have a whole bunch of plates, and a non-Jew came, had the same set of plates, and had a non-kosher plate, and they mixed it in together with your plates. Okay, it's all, nothing's been cooked. Just in the cleaning lady came and said, oh, I have, the same set of dishes that you have, and we're getting a new one, so here, I gave you a present. I saw you were missing, you broke, I myself broke when I was washing the dishes last week. I broke a couple of soup bowls, so I brought two of them from my own set, and now you have to, now you have the full dozen that you had originally. And I actually did you a service. I washed them all together. I washed them out, and then now they're all stacked up together. So now what do? So now you say, I have 10 plates that are kosher, two plates that are not kosher. There's not a chance in the world that I could tell the difference, right? So what do I do? Do I have to throw all of them out? So the answer is, no, you don't have to throw any of them out. Right? Because of the fact that that would be a case that's batel b'rov. Because of the fact that you have something non-kosher, but it is a dry item, it is similar in nature, and has not been mixed together. It's a separate plate. So then the halacha would be the same thing would be if it was a spoon or a fork, it would be the same thing. So the halacha is you could use all of them. You could use all of them. Because of the fact that, of course, you'll say, well, according to the Raj, but one person couldn't use all of them at the same time, but that wouldn't happen with plates. How are you going to do that with plates? So therefore, the reality is that in such a situation, as strange as that may sound, the halacha is bottle. It is bottle. It's bottle barov. However, if you have a situation where something was cooked, if it's cooked together, that's where all the tsaris begin. And the tsaris begin because of the fact that taste comes out of what was cooked, and that could present a very big problem even with a utensil, okay? Because the law of transferring taste does not only apply food to food, but it applies utensil to food. So therefore, if you had a hot bowl of soup, let's say a hot pot of soup on the fire, the easiest case, Kli Rishon, hot pot of soup sitting on the fire, and you stirred it with a non-kosher spoon, and you stir it with a non-kosher, or it was a meat soup, and you stirred it with a dairy spoon. Okay, so now, you as soon as you started to stir, say, oh my gosh, and you immediately took it out. You say, well, it was just there for a second. So it was just there for a second, maybe I don't need shisha. Maybe I don't need anything. So the answer is that here, we don't know. There's no way to know. How could you, there is no Kabbalah, there is no, a lot of these laws are really essentially Moshe Misina, it's a Kabbalah, how this works and how far we're machmer and where we're lenient. So there's no way to know how quickly it takes for something is, once it's boiling, it has to be boiling. In other words, the transference of taste only takes place in a boiling situation. If it's just warm, there's no problem. If it's cold, there's no problem. If you stick a cold spoon into a dairy spoon into a cold soup that happens to be meat, you don't need a bittel because of the fact that assuming the spoon was clean, because the transference of taste only takes place when something is boiling hot. But so long as it's not boiling hot, the situation could be easily rectified. But if it's boiling hot, we don't know how long it takes for the problem to come about. So therefore, even if it was just there for a moment, even if it was just there for a moment, a person has to be concerned that all of the taste came out. So if you had non-kosher meat in the pot for 1 second, and you immediately saw the problem, you pulled it right out. So you say, well, okay, I got it right away. The answer is you got it 1 second too late. Because if it's in there for a second, it's possible that all the taste came out. We don't know. And thus you would need to be machmir 60 times the size of the non-kosher item. That's the law. And the same thing, if it was a spoon or a fork or whatever it may be, utensil, so now you'll say, well, here you have another question, because how much is in the utensil? You don't know that either. In other words, if it's a non-kosher utensil, let's say the guy brought, you know, you have sometimes in restaurants or in hotels, this is kosher hotels, especially this is one of the challenges that come up in the hotels that are, you know, kosher for Pesach. So from what I've heard from many people who are in the kosher business, the issues that come up in the kitchen in those hotels are not chametz. It's because that's easy to keep out. You can keep out the chametz, the mashgiach, the person who's in charge can control what comes in and what comes out. That's not so much the problem. The problems are going to come up because the workers, if they're not familiar with the laws of Basav Echolov, if they're not familiar, if they don't have experience working in kosher kitchens, so to them, you know, a dairy spoon, a meat spoon, what's the difference? So even if everything is kosher l'Pesach, but that doesn't mean that the fellow won't stick a dairy spoon into a meat pot, that's what you really have to watch for. So, you know, in a situation where it's a kosher hotel, kosher restaurant, and they have experienced staff, so they know, they've been trained, they know this you do, this you don't do, you don't ask any, even if it makes no sense to them, but they know that's the job, that's what you have to do, finished. But when you're dealing in a situation where the place has been koshered and the staff is not familiar, so this is where the mashgichim have to really keep their eyes open. Because of the fact that this is where you're going to get the trouble. They're not, this to them, to keep chametz out, that's not such a hard thing. But, I mean, it may not be the easiest, but that's controllable. But to bust of a cholov, that's when you really have to watch. But if a spoon or a fork goes in, you don't know how much non-kosher taste is in the spoon. I don't know. Who knows? It doesn't come with a resume, right? The spoon doesn't come with a whole listing. This is my history. You know, yesterday I was used for this, and the day before, you don't know that. So you have to be machmir against the size of the entire spoon or the entire item that fell in. Okay, I'm just watching the clock. This is an overview. As I said at the outset, these are the laws of taruvos that are learned in the Shulchan Aruch Yeridea, which any person who studies for smicha has to have a mastery of these laws. It's very hard to summarize them all in one shir, but I'm just trying to give an overview based on the pasuk in the parasha yesterday. I felt that we couldn't pass by the pasuk of Mishras and not speak about Tam Ke'ikr. So that's, I'm just trying to give a basic overview. Now, let me just run through situations where things cannot be bottled. Not everything in the Torah can be nullified, okay? Even in the laws of kashrus, not everything can be nullified, even with 60 times the amount. So I'm just going to list them off. Each one of them is a discussion in its own right, and really, if a question came up, a person should consult with his rav to see what the halacha would be. But just to create an awareness, the following things cannot be nullified, okay? Number one. An item which is what's called a davar sheyesh lo matirin. Davar sheyesh lo matirin means an item which it may be non-kosher now, but with the passage of time, it will become kosher. How do you have that? So one example would be, let's say, chadash. Okay, the new grain. People, you know, we spoke about this one several years ago. The Torah prohibits the new grain that grows every year to be eaten until the second day of Pesach, or by us, and goes till the first day of Chol Hamoed. You're not allowed to eat chadash. Okay, so you have today, we rely, a lot of people are not so meticulous when it comes to this, because there's what to rely upon, that they rely on all kinds of doubts. You don't know, today grain is held from year to year. So all, well, many people are lenient in this, but there are those who are makbid on yoshan. Right? The people say, I only eat yoshan. What does it mean, I only eat yoshan? I only eat what I know to be, no, everyone has to eat yoshan. There's no option to eat chadash. But the point is that the people who are makbid on yoshan will only eat that which they know for sure is from the old grain. And if it's from the new, if it's even a possibility from the new grain, they won't eat it. Okay, but let's say you know for sure it's from the new grain, then no, then there's no heter for that by anybody. If you know for a fact, it's, you know, if you somehow have access to the information and you know that this spaghetti was made from grain that's from the new crop and it's not yet Pesach, nobody's allowed to eat it. That's the prohibition of the Torah of Chodesh. The Torah tells in Parshas Amar that you're not allowed to eat until the first day Chol Hamoed Pesach. Now, let's say such a thing fell into a mixture with 60 times the amount of permissible spaghetti. So, right, one strand of one stick of spaghetti from the Chodesh fell in with 60 pieces of the Yashan. So you say, well, terrific, even though it's a problem, but I have Shishim. The answer is, but this is not bottle, because this, since this item, if you would just wait, would be permissible. Right? It's only prohibited now because of the day on the calendar that it is now. But if you wait a while, it'll become permissible. Such things are not bottle. This doesn't come up all that often, but that would be an example of something which is not bottle. What's that? Okay, I'm gonna get that right now. Now, chametz is another situation of something which is not bottle. Now, when it comes to chametz, there are two reasons given why, right? We know this is one of the totally agonizing things, that one of the things that makes Pesach so much fun is that chametz is not bottle at all, right? On Pesach, chametz is not bottle. Okay, that means even if one crumb of chametz fell into a whole pot of non-chametz, of Pesach food, you have a problem on your hands, because there's no bittul for chametz. Now, why is there no bittul for chametz? So that's essentially a din derabbanan, min ha-Torah chametz bittul, also in most cases, but there's a din derabbanan with machmer that you should not do it. Why? So one reason that's given is because chametz is also considered a davar she'yesh lo matirin, because it's only prohibited for these 8 days. If you wait a week, it'll all be fine. Right? Another reason, that's not the only reason that's given. Another reason that's given is because of the fact that it's an iser chamor, because of the fact that it's a food that the person chayef karis for eating. It's a very severe iser, so therefore it's not bottle. So that's another example where having 60 times will not help. Now, it would help before Pesach. Should this happen in food preparation for Pesach, you have to know, when did this shiloh come about? If it came about before Pesach, it very likely is bottle. But if it happened on Pesach, you have big tzaras, right? So that this is another situation where having 60 times will not help. Okay, the third situation, which is already more common, and this is something which could be very, very annoying, is a beria, something which is a complete creature, that falls into food is not bottle. Okay, so a fly that falls into a pot of soup. Okay, yeah, even, you know, you'll say, well, the women would spill it out anyway, even without the laws of kashrus, because, you know, I'm not going to eat that. But let's say the man is cooking and he's a little different emotional makeup, right? So he says, all right, listen, you know, it's 10,000 times the amount of soup. Who even knows where it is now? Right, it's all gone. But that's a problem. If a beria, if a complete creature, an ant or a fly falls into food, you have to find it. You have to find it. If you find it and take it out, then you can save the food, because most likely you had 60 times the size of the ant. However, in taking it out, you also have to be careful, because if you're taking it out with a spoon, so then you're going to take out, let's say it fell into the soup, and you see it, so you're going to fish it out with the spoon, but 1 minute, the spoon now has a little soup with the fly, and it doesn't have 60 times the amount of soup as the fly, so the spoon may become not kosher, right? So that you may have to kosher the spoon as a result of that. But the fact of the matter is, in the bigger picture, you can rescue the food. But if an insect falls into food, you have to call the detectives, call the FBI, and find it. Because if you don't get it out, then it's a very big problem whether the food is bottled. And another, I'm sorry. Half is all right. The head's not a berry. No, it doesn't matter because that. I believe. The next case is a chaticha ruya l'schabed. Chaticha ruya l'schabed means if it was the type of food that is sizable enough that you could not only eat it yourself but you could serve others. It's such a large piece of meat that it was big enough that you could serve it to other people. They also have an issue. They also have an issue because the question of why that is, it seems perhaps because of the chashivas of it, because the whole idea of nullification is that it's insignificant. But something that has inherent significance, if it has the ability, if it's so sizable that you could serve company with it, so you can't really ever say such a thing is insignificant, that type of thing is also not, generally speaking, not bottle. You have to really ask to determine whether it's hard to know exactly what the size of chaticha ruya l'schabed is. And the last case, which I will discuss, not there is more, but I'm just taking the most common ones, would be what's called a davar shebeminyan. A davar shebeminyan means an item which is sold by individual unit, not sold by the sum total. In other words, for example, milk is you get a container of milk, so any drop of milk or any amount of milk is just part of the container of milk. But eggs are sold by the piece, even though you can't go into the store and buy 3 eggs, at least in America, you can't do that. But eggs are sold by a dozen eggs, or 1.5 dozen eggs, or 2 dozen eggs. So something which the item itself is sold by amount has a certain inherent chashivas also. It's, in other words, it has a certain prestige because you need a dozen, they won't sell you less than a dozen eggs. This thing is a dozen eggs. So each egg is one of the dozen. Each egg has a certain chashivas. And therefore, if you had an egg of a non-kosher bird, which very, very rarely would ever happen, but if you had an egg of a non-kosher bird that fell in together with kosher, then you would have a problem. If you have an egg that you did not check to see if it had a blood spot that fell in, that is not a problem at all. But if you had it, because checking for a blood spot is a l'chatchila, and b'di'eved, a person could rely on the rov that the majority of eggs are not. That's how a person can eat a hard-boiled egg. No one ever checked it, right? So the answer is because you only have to check l'chatchila, because the majority of eggs are not a problem. So if you ever one time make a woman or a man or whatever is making a cake and cracked an egg, and I forgot to check. Once it's done, it's done. You don't have to throw anything out. It's all good. Because it's only l'chatchila. But if it's from a non-kosher animal, if non-kosher bird, that's something else. Then the egg isn't kosher. If the egg isn't kosher, so then you have a situation. And the egg is a davar shebeminyan. In that situation also would not be bottled. So these are just an overview, as I said at the outset, just an overview. You can't get all of your day in one sitting. That no one has ever, despite numerous attempts to do so, no one has ever, even they don't even have an app that could, give you all the laws of your day in one shot. However, the fact of the matter is that I think it's worthwhile to just have an awareness when it comes to the laws of Bittul, which do come up. It happens, like I said at the beginning, it's almost inevitable that situations arise, and as with the best of intentions, shilas come up. It just happens, and it's worthwhile to at least have a certain awareness of these halachas, so that in certain cases a person can know for themselves. In other cases, when they ask the question, they at least can ask the question precisely, intelligently, so that they will get an accurate answer.